Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. A Netflix original documentary in association with the Center for Investigative Reporting, a Requisite Media production. A blonde woman in a yellow safety vest drives an SUV, a walkie-talkie next to her.
Oriental 4, 1401 Washington Avenue at Gino's Pub. Female's been locked in the bathroom for over an hour. They can't get to her. She's overdosed on something.
She pulls up to a restaurant called Gino's with a fire truck parked outside. Paramedics roll out a stretcher from a pizza joint. Later, as an EMT walks out of the restaurant, the blonde woman approaches a muscular fireman.
She did overdose in the bathroom.
He points to the EMT.
She did overdose in the bathroom.
The EMT shows her a spoon and a tube.
2773 Logan Street, they're off Darnell. 23-year-old female.
She's dead. Overdose. It's in Barbersville, South County. I got some naloxone.
She pats the fireman's shoulder as she walks off.
32 10th Avenue for an overdose.
White letters appear over black. Heroin. The final E is enclosed in parentheses. As the blonde woman drives around the city, words appear. Jan Rader, Deputy Chief, Huntington Fire Department.
It's sad when you can drive around the city and say, oh, somebody died there, somebody died there, you know, but that's the reality of this area. This White House right here, we had two deaths in that house in 2015. It's crazy. When you add hopelessness and unemployment and lack of education on top of all that, it's kind of like a recipe for disaster. I fear that we've lost a couple generations, not just one generation. I fear that we've lost more than that.
As a view moves along a suburban neighborhood, text appears. Huntington, West Virginia has been called the overdose capital of America. Its overdose death rate is 10 times the national average.
West Virginia is mainly a blue-collar state in general. So we have a lot of people that work hard for a living, do a lot of physical labor. There's a lot of injuries. A lot of people in this area got hooked on pills through a legitimate injury and have now moved on to heroin because they can't get pills anymore.
At the Cabell County Courthouse, several young men and women file into a courtroom. Jan sits in the jury box. The judge, a middle-aged woman with short blonde hair, speaks into a microphone.
How about Selena?
Words appear. Judge Patricia Keller, Cabell County Drug Court.
Congratulations. You're the new girl. Welcome to Drug Court.
Thank you.
I'm Patricia Keller. I'm the judge. One thing that's very, very important in Drug Court is that you show up. Okay?
Absolutely.
It ranks right behind being honest. Honest first, show up second. Then third, try not to use drugs, okay? Did you really relapse?
Yes, I did.
Tell me about it.
I was just in my head about a lot of things, and I ended up using.
Were you honest with him about your relapse?
Yes.
Tell me how you were honest with him.
Well, I went in to see him the next morning. We got in his office, and as I sat down, he said, what's been going on? And I started from right there and told him.
I have to say, that's what we call an honest relapse. Sometimes, unfortunately, relapses happen, particularly early in the program. But if you're honest about it, I can work with you. Because I can't tell you how many people relapse and try to lie about it, figuring it's just easier to lie about it. And it never is.
She gestures to and from her eyes.
Focus, focus, focus on what?
Myself, my recovery.
To help you do that right now, I want to give you some direction and some structure. So I'm going to put you on home confinement.
Okay.
You were going to have me do 4 more hours extra community service.
How many hours of community service?
4.
No, I was going to have you do 12.
Well, my 8 and...
No, 12 for your relapse and 8, which you normally have to do.
No, ma'am. It was 4. You give me 4.
Let me give you a clue, okay? This is only your second week, but don't ever say no, ma'am, to me.
Yes, ma'am.
But I understand you didn't do any.
No, ma'am. When I was on parole, my parole officer didn't expect nothing from me. Kind of in my head, I thought... maybe this is how that would kind of work, and I'm finding that. The people I've talked to said no.
We don't roll that way, do we?
No, we don't roll that way. No, ma'am.
I appreciate your honesty in telling me that you didn't think that it was really that big a deal.
Yes, ma'am.
Now you know it is a big deal.
Yes, ma'am.
And you know I'm going to sanction you again.
Yes, ma'am.
So I'm going to put you in jail. I'm going to have you do 24 hours in jail.
Yes, ma'am.
Bailiffs lead the man out of the courtroom in handcuffs, chained to other convicts.
Thank you, kind sir.
Now, dusk settles as a short-haired woman drives through a neighborhood. Words appear. Nisha Freeman, Brown Bag Ministry.
I was reading the paper one day, and a girl had been murdered in a cornfield. They found her body in a cornfield about 40 minutes from here, but she was a Huntington girl. It just said, you know, basically a prostitute was found in a cornfield and she was murdered, and it was kind of like the end. And it just really kind of tore me up that nothing happened. You know, there wasn't anybody that really kind of looked to see who killed her. It was just, you know, somebody, one less person you have to fool with is what I read out of the article. So I was just going to take brown bag lunches and put a gospel track in them and find some prostitutes, and I just thought they would just, you know, sit on a step and read a track and get some food and get Jesus, and everything would just turn out awesome. And it didn't turn out that way. Hey, pretty lady.
She leans out of her car.
Where have you been?
Oh.
Well, that's a good place to be.
Yeah, try to be good.
How's it going?
My sister came home with a new baby.
She had a baby?
Yes, she did.
Very good. Are you still living over here?
Prettiest thing on the earth. Yeah. Okay, I was looking friend for you the other day.
Freeman, oh, is yeah, I'll look for you.
Okay.
Nisha continues driving.
Oh. Here's Western Regional Jail. This is one of the girls calling from jail.
I have a prepaid call from Belinda.
I love Belinda.
Hello?
Hey, Belinda. We came this past week. I've came across a new rehab. It's in Hanging Rock, Ohio. That's about maybe 45 minutes, an hour away from Huntington. And I would love to see if we can't get you in there.
Subtitles. I just don't want one right connected here. So I think me venturing out in a new place will put my new thoughts that I have in a good state. I think it'll be good for me.
I love her. I think you're right.
Nisha cruises down a street.
When we first started, this is where all the arrests would take place. This is 6th Avenue. The citizens are tired of seeing the girls walking up and down the street, but what the citizens need to realize is if there weren't men driving up and down the street to pick them up, the girls wouldn't be there. So quit arresting the girls and start doing some reverse stings and arresting some men. I don't have an objection to the girls getting arrested. What I have an objection to is that the girls are the only ones getting arrested. So if you can find an undercover cop that's a man to pretend that he's going to pick up some women, then by golly, find an undercover cop woman and pretend that she's a prostitute so men can pick her up. And if you can't find one, I know some people that would volunteer to do it.
Daytime, firemen from the Huntington Fire Department hose down their trucks parked outside the station. In a hallway, individual portraits of past firefighters fill a frame hanging on a wall. Today's firemen eat around a table. Jan Rader exits the station and drives out to respond to a call.
20 years ago when we were going to overdoses, they were few and far between. Nowadays, we have 5, 6, 7 overdoses daily.
You can't get into him?
No, the door. He fell against the doors here. He fell up against the door.
Okay. Do you know, is he a known user? Or?
Well, this is the second time this week he's OD'd. Third floor, on the left, all the way down, the door's open.
Okay.
Jan runs up flights of stairs and walks into an open apartment.
Fire department!
Moving to a closed bathroom door, she pushes against it. It opens slightly.
Yeah, he's up against the door.
She takes out a bag valve mask from her kit.
Hi, buddy.
She peers into the bathroom through the narrow opening. Straining, she pushes against the door with all her weight, but it doesn't open any further. She squeezes her body through the tiny gap and enters the bathroom.
Hey, buddy.
Shit.
Later.
Try to rock him forward so you can scoot in here enough. He's way up against the door and he's purple. Okay, get his ass out of here.
First responders carry the man out of the bathroom.
He's a big boy.
Is it a different one?
Yeah, we were on second floor.
What's his name?
Jan inserts a syringe into the man's nose. With a concerned expression, she straightens, breathing heavily.
I didn't see anybody else.
All right,
we're good.
Ma'am?
Kneeling next to the man, a first responder lightly squeezes the airbag on the valve mask.
Woo, there we go.
Oh. Hey. There he is.
All right, Cody.
I'll wake you up in the morning.
Stay still, Bob.
What hospital you want to go to, Bob?
Cabell, I guess.
Okay.
Cody, have
just
you...
Just on your butt, okay?
Okay.
Don't try to stand up yet. Just get your bearings, okay? Stay right there.
Have you ever tried to get clean or anything, honey?
I'm actually going to rehab in Beckley.
Okay. When do you go?
Friday.
You do? Okay, good. Cody, I'm really happy to hear that you're doing that. That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Now, under an evening sky tinged with pink, Nisha Freeman drives through the city. Trees, stores, and billboards pass by.
There's Jocelyn right there.
Nisha pulls over.
I'm gonna yell at him. Jocelyn! Jocelyn!
A woman walks up to the car.
Nisha, I had to take me on the streets.
Nisha purses her lips in a frown.
You're doing so good. You were doing so good. And you can do that good again.
I lost my job and shit, and I couldn't help it. This is the only place I could turn to.
What if I call Mitch Webb and see if you can go to the mission tonight?
I'm not allowed there anymore.
What if I call and see if you can get in there tonight?
I'm not in there no more.
But what if I call and see if you can get in?
Okay, you're right. That's never happened.
When was the last time you was kicked out?
Like a year ago.
Oh, that's so old. That's so old news.
She picks up her phone.
Come hug Nisha.
What, honey?
Come hug.
Yeah.
Nisha rolls down her window as she puts the phone to her ear.
Hey, how are you? It's Nisha.
So you can't stay at the mission long term. If you want to come in tonight, that would be okay. Now you would need to come in over on the inside.
You're not listening. Listen.
But if you want to do that, I will help you tomorrow. We'll need to try to get you some recovery somewhere.
Do you want to go to the mission or not?
Sure.
All right. We'll be there in a few minutes, Mr. Webb.
She gives Jocelyn a ride.
I've made a lot of money out here just sucking dick and stuff.
Doing crazy things and prostituting, so that's what I do.
I was 18.
I started young. Being an addict, it's hard because you can't just do it once and stop. You have to keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going.
She was clean 7 months. She just relapsed, 3 weeks ago?
Outside the mission.
Something like that.
So we can do this.
Yes. 7 months.
Yes.
7 months under her belt.
You can do it again.
So all you got to do is worry about right now. Okay. Then we worry about tomorrow.
All right, sassy pants. Go on. Got people waiting on you. I love you. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Nisha gets back in her car.
Hope is the girl that is, she'll tell me anything, and she tells me more than I want to know. She's the first girl that we got off the streets. I was asking her one time, I said, what is so powerful about this heroin? And she said, the only way I know to explain it to you is that it is getting high on heroin is what it would be like for you to kiss Jesus. She said, that's how powerful it is. And I was like, that's probably pretty daggone powerful.
Daytime, a train trundles slowly up a set of tracks alongside a long stretch of coal cars. In a tree-lined neighborhood, houses sit partially covered in shade. A man strolls along a sidewalk. An American flag flies outside the Cabell Huntington Health Department building. Inside, Jan sifts through cartons filled with packaged medicine boxes.
When you take an opiate, it attaches to certain receptors in the brain, and it basically suppresses your respiratory system, and you stop breathing. Naloxone actually knocks the opiate off that receptor, so they start breathing again. They wake up immediately.
A gray-haired man signs a carton box.
You are the bone diggity.
I know it.
You're going to save lives, you know that?
Yeah.
It's a moral obligation to me. I'm an old medic, I'm a nurse, I'm a firefighter. I'm built to help people.
Exiting her car into a light rain, she enters a building with a box of naloxone and a clipboard. Words appear, Huntington Fire Station number 10. Jan walks to a lounge.
First responders in general don't treat those suffering from addiction well. They haven't in the past, and we're trying to change that here in Huntington.
Well, look at there. There's my Prince Charming. Here is our naloxone policy. It's the city policy, so use your best judgment whether you need to use it or wait for EMS and just bag.
And that's how the policy's written. It says you can. So we are under no obligation
or requirement to administer it?
You are not. You are under obligation to provide BLS, which is basic life support, which is providing rescue breaths. If you get notification that EMS is going to be a while, I'd go ahead and use it. You know, so there's no contraindications whatsoever.
We're not required to administer.
Right. One box per truck. There's two doses in there.
So you're the naloxone dealer.
I am.
Outside, she closes the trunk of her SUV. Later, she hands boxes to another fireman.
Number three goes on engine two, and number four goes, just put it in the medic bag.
Okay.
And there's plenty. The health department has plenty. So, you know, if you want to use it, feel free to go ahead. Two boxes of naloxone. New naloxone. Some protocol. Anytime you have a save, let me know immediately. Put it in the run. Give me the run number, any data that I can use.
Bye.
Jan runs out to her SUV.
Angel one responding.
She drives.
I'm not really sure what a plateau is going to look like.
At a house, she and other first responders provide life support.
You know, I see this as a countrywide problem that has the potential to bankrupt the country. You know, we conservatively estimated that Cabell County, and we're talking 96,000 people, spent probably about $100 million in health care costs associated with IV drug use in 2015. That's one small county in one small state. I can't even fathom what it's going to look like when it plateaus. But I know it will be welcomed.
She follows an ambulance to a hospital.
Yes, ma'am, this was an overdose.
Paramedics unload the victim.
We're clear, returning.
Copy one.
With Judge Patricia Keller.
I understand that you didn't go screen. That's not good. I got a concern for you, and that is, what are we going to do with you?
What do you mean?
Well, what's your plan now that you have a baby? How are you going to do all the things you need to do for drug court? Do we need to get Child Protective Services involved in this? I mean, are you going to need some... Are you going to be able to do this?
Yes.
Because I don't want to have to send you to prison because you haven't planned this out.
No.
Another woman hands the judge a business card.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. Kelly has a business card. Is that the coolest thing ever? Kelly J. Stickler, recovery coach. But I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Naja, you want to come on up? So, today's special day?
5 months clean.
5 months clean?
Yay!
Naja beams wearing a green hoodie.
When was the last time you had 5 months clean time?
3 years ago.
3 years ago. I'm really, really proud of you. You're doing wonderful things in the program.
I'm trying.
Nighttime, the drug court participant, Naja Menapace, sits in the backseat of a moving car, smiling softly down at her phone. Blurry streetlights flare into balls of color. In front, Nisha sips a takeout beverage as she drives through an underpass. Later, she stops the car and leans out the window.
Would you like some food?
Naja hands over a brown paper bag and a business card from the back, which Nisha passes to the woman outside.
We're the Brown Bag Ministry. Have we met before?
I don't think so.
Okay, we're the Brown Bag Ministry. We usually come out one night a week, Wednesday nights, and we just give you some food.
Well, thank you.
That's why I like to do this with Nisha, because, I mean, I'll just tell you that I have been out here walking the streets before. If I ever get the stupid idea that I think I might want to use, you know, because an addict's brain tells you just do it one time. Just one time. It won't hurt. Nobody will know. But that never works. One time will lead me right back to walking the streets. So, and also, I mean, I've seen girls out here that I have used with and, you know, been out here with, that they see me clean now and see that it's possible. So it helps me, and it hopefully can help somebody else. And I love Nisha.
Nisha slows down.
Yep, that sure is. Would you like some food? You want a food? You want some brown bag? Do you need a hygiene bag?
No, I'm sorry.
One of the purple bags. There's our card.
Nausea takes a sip from a cup.
But I just couldn't imagine. I really just could not imagine myself being out here like I used to be. I'm just so totally different frame of mind and just like, I just can't imagine it. I don't know how I ever did it.
A fire truck passes Nisha's car going in the opposite direction. Inside the truck, caller said the female is actually laying on their counter at the checkout. She is breathing but not responding at all. A view through the windshield shows the truck turning into the parking lot of a convenience store. Firemen walk into the store and gather around a woman lying on the floor at a checkout counter.
She's commanded dispatch.
They set up a bag valve mask on the woman.
Go ahead, command. Advise EMS, the patient is unconscious. Does she have any fresh tracks or anything there?
They check her arm, then press an injector to her thigh.
Outer 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Injection complete.
She was collapsed on the counter. She was strong pulse. Eyes are pinpoint. Want to have any information to get white powder in her nose?
Oh, there she comes.
I hear you.
Let's continue to go.
They lift the woman up and lay her down on a stretcher. Dispatch Rescue 11, 918 6th Street for an overdose. Doesn't shock me anymore.
Yeah, not anymore. Yes, ma'am, we have assisted EMS. They're going to be transporting the cable. Engine force terminating command, return to quarters.
He walks back to his fire truck, and the firefighters drive back to their station.
22 years ago when I started my career, it was probably 10 years before I saw a large number of deaths. And now the kids that are starting today are seeing 30, 40 dead bodies in a year. And they're not just dead bodies, they're young people.
Tell more stories.
I don't know what that's doing to them psychologically. It bothers me. It's okay for me to see that number of dead bodies. I'm an older lady at the end of my career. It's got to affect them.
So 2 months, 27 overdoses.
A young fireman flips through a record log.
It's just us.
That's just me. My call.
The guy went down first. She gets in his leather coat, takes an Narcan, and pops him with it. He's back. Now she's down. Well, he's still messed up and don't know where his Narcan is because she used it on him and brought him back.
Wow.
I think you get calloused by a lot of things. You know, besides the job, you get a lot of callous about life in general. In the police departments, I think policemen have always had that. They've always, it's all they see is the bad. Fire departments around here have turned that trend. It's all you see is the bad all the time. It's constant, bad, bad, bad. You get a bad attitude. It's about life in general.
He stares off into the distance.
And then you drink.
He grins. Now the Ohio River flows lazily below the Robert C. Byrd Bridge. A cloudy sky casts large shadows on the city, and a coal train chugs along a railroad track. In a meeting room, Scott Lemley, criminal intelligence analyst for the Huntington Police Department, gives a presentation to an audience that includes Jan.
Non-fatal overdoses in the city of Huntington rose quite considerably. If you remember, in August, we had 28 overdoses in one day. I always talk about the shift from pills to heroin and how that shift occurred. Starting in about August of last year, we may have seen another shift where we've moved from heroin and fentanyl to stuff that's even more stronger, to the carfentanyl. That's why you're seeing
He refers
that.
To a graph.
From noon till midnight, that's when you see your greatest spike of overdoses.
Actually, I want to point out that these figures could be a lot worse than they are, especially the deaths, if it hadn't been for this health department and them supplying the first responders with naloxone. We have over 100 saves on the Huntington Fire Department alone.
A lot of people believe in town that by having naloxone more available, that it's just empowering the addicts. How do you respond to that? I've heard that so many times, because I encourage my students to come down here and get qualified on naloxone, but some people aren't exactly sure if it's helping.
I certainly don't think that naloxone itself is enabling by any stretch of the manner, because a lot of them get mad because you've thrown them into withdrawals and now they got to go get another hit, you know, to not be dope sick. The only qualification for getting into long-term recovery is you have to be alive. And I don't care if I save somebody 50 times. That's 50 chances to get into long-term recovery. People do go into long-term recovery and they do become productive citizens, tax-paying citizens. And they are going to, in turn, help more and more people suffering from addiction. So I truly believe that, you know, even though we have this doom and gloom, thank you, Debbie Downer, but I think that we certainly need to focus on the successes that we as a community have had.
In an apartment, a lanky long-haired man with neck tattoos grabs a beanie. Words appear, Mickey Watson, recovering addict. He leaves the apartment, a backpack slung over one shoulder. Last time Jan brought me back, this shit ain't heroin no more. It's fentanyl and elephant tranquilizer. In the past month, there's been 10 people that I know of die, and for some damn reason, I'm still sitting here. Mickey walks down a sidewalk wearing the beanie. Later, he hugs Jan.
So y'all meet here and then go on over?
Yeah, we meet here every Saturday morning. And
okay.
Then we go over the wall right there and walk the riverbank. Okay. Hand out supplies to all them.
They get into a car. Jan drives.
I was born into this. I've been getting high since I was 10 years old. I didn't get sober for my kids. I didn't get sober for my wife. The pain and misery got so bad. You got a loaded needle laying beside your bed so you don't wake up too sick. Pull up a shot to dope. It's definitely, that's not a way to live.
They get out and walk up to a tent by the riverbank.
Rest yourself out there. They've got chili and hot ham biscuits up there on the top, bud.
They walk alongside a wall.
There's where I used to live.
That what, honey?
Right here's where I used to live.
This where you used to live?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yep. One of them. It's the last place I lived. They lived all down this riverbank.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
We still don't have the numbers yet.
Yeah, that's what the paper was saying.
For 2016, it's going to be probably around over 80.
Deaths?
Jan nods.
Is that higher in 2015?
2015 was 70 in the county. It's going to be higher.
You know, last year was the first year I haven't been a part of that number.
I never thought of it that way.
I didn't either until you were just sitting there talking. I was thinking, you know what? Since I've lived in Huntington, there hasn't been a year gone by I haven't been a part of the overdose number.
Wow.
No, I didn't think that was possible.
She gives him a side hug. He nods solemnly. Now silhouetted against the sun, a group of cyclists bikes down a street. A coal train sits stationary on a track surrounded by lush greenery. A sign painted on a high-rise reads, West Virginia Building. At home, Jan puts on a pair of shiny black shoes.
His shoes, they're shiny, but they're so freaking hot on your feet. You couldn't wear them all the time. They'd make your feet stink so badly.
Her white shirt sports a badge on the chest and pins on the collar flaps. She buckles a belt around the waistband of her trousers, then adjusts her tie in front of a mirror.
I suck at ties, just so you know.
Now a reporter interviews her inside an office building.
Of course you've worked for a very, very long time to reach this point and with quite an exemplary career. Talk a little bit about the experience that's led you to this moment.
Coming up through the ranks has prepared me for this. So, and also probably being the only woman for years has probably helped prepare me for this as well. This is a very personally satisfying profession. I can walk away every day thinking or knowing that I made a difference.
Later, she poses for a photo with Judge Keller. What was the reason why you wanted to come out today? She's the reason I'm sitting here. She saved my life twice in a week. It ain't just a job to her. She cares.
The opportunity that we're having today in witnessing the swearing in of Jan Rader as chief of the Huntington Fire Department, that history is being made in the city of Huntington and in the state of West Virginia.
Judge Keller pins a badge on Jan and hugs her. Text appears. Jan Rader was named the first female fire chief in West Virginia's history.
Even though Huntington is experiencing difficult financial issues and an unprecedented public health epidemic, working together, I have no doubt that we will emerge better and stronger as a city and as a community. Today, we stand together proving that anything is possible. The road may be rough with many barricades, yet we are all capable of finding the strength within to reach our goals. Thank you all for coming here, and a special thanks to somebody who completely changed my life more than they will ever know, Mickey.
Sitting in the audience, recovering addict Mickey Watson wears an overwhelmed expression. He drops his gaze as he shakes his head. Later, he embraces Jan warmly.
I love you, Jan.
I love you too, honey. I love you too.
I'll always be there for you.
I know.
If you can get them to care a quarter of what you do, it would change the city.
And that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going
to
do, buddy.
If I can ever help in any way.
Talk to anybody. Anything I can do to help.
Okay.
Just let me know.
All right. I'll be calling you. We'll do it together.
Sounds like a plan.
I love you too, honey.
He leaves with a companion. Now Jan drives in her SUV.
Copy, 1808 7th Avenue, apartment 3, 32-year-old male cardiac arrest, over there.
Jan hurries up steps and into a house where firemen attend to a man in a hallway. They lift the unconscious man and move him into a larger room. Jan places an injector against the thigh of the man's sweatpants. Firemen supply him with oxygen. Now, in her car, Jan speaks on the phone.
He's alive. He came to, we gave him 0.4 milligrams of Narcan. EMS gave him 2 more milligrams of Narcan, and he came to.
A rundown neighborhood of working class homes passes by Jan's car window as she drives through the city.
This is my community, this is our community, and we will not be defined by this problem.
Porch lights shine as dusk settles, rows of trees standing tall behind the houses. In drug court, men and women sit in two groups separated by an aisle. Judge Keller takes a seat at the bench. She speaks to a woman in an orange prison uniform.
We took a vote in the treatment team and decided at that point that you were going to be discharged from drug court. You have a right, before we just automatically send you back in front of the circuit judge, to have a hearing on our request for the discharge. Do you swear or affirm that any testimony you give in this matter would be the truth?
I swear. I would need help, you know, trying to keep myself clean, keep myself on the straight and narrow to do what I need to do. You know, being in jail and stuff like that, I just don't see where that necessarily helps the issue of the underlying problem that causes you to be in jail.
I mean, I understand that people, especially early in the program, it's not out of the realm of possibility for somebody to relapse. I get that. But what I don't get and what I can't tolerate is having you share these drugs with other participants in the program who I'm trying to move forward with their lives.
She gazes intently at the woman who sits with her handcuffed hands clasped near her chin.
So you don't have an explanation for that?
No, I don't.
I know my past actions have not shown that I wanted to be in this program, and I am ashamed and embarrassed by them. This is my last chance to get my life right. I do want to be a man my wife can look up to and be proud of. I don't want her to have to worry about me in and out of jail. But above that, I want to be a man I can be proud of. I want to be able to look at myself in the mirror and like who I see.
Welcome back to drug court.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm going to have a seat back there. We'll process you back out, okay?
Thank you.
Now she addresses a bespectacled woman.
Leah, I know that we ran into some issues or some problems with you this week. It's not been one of your better weeks.
Right.
I can't tolerate you lying to your probation officer. And we had those two incidents of you doing that. So I'm going to take you into custody today.
A bailiff leads handcuffed convicts out of the courtroom.
This is a really, really exciting day for us. Anytime we can do graduation. Ryan, who'd you bring with you today?
My mom and my girlfriend.
right there.
It doesn't seem like you've been here long enough to graduate.
It does.
As a bearded man gives another guy a hug, Jan smiles and applauds. A man with spiky hair addresses the courtroom.
My life has completely changed. I feel better than I have ever in my life. I want to thank Judge Keller, Matt, and you guys. It's an awesome program. Thank you.
He hugs Judge Keller, then the bearded man. Next, wearing a chain with dog tags around his neck, a guy with a buzz cut steps up. Judge Keller pats him fondly on the back as she embraces him.
Kyle, he just makes me smile.
It's hard telling where I'd be. Most likely prison. I can't tell you enough how grateful I am of you. You know, coming from the life that I lived, I would have never thought I'd say this, but I truly believe that I made a friend in you for life, a public official.
Nasha, would you please come on up?
Standing next to the judge, Nisha smiles and applauds as Nasha walks up from the gallery. Nisha gives her a warm embrace. Grinning, Nasha fans her face. Later, she gives another woman a hug and a kiss on the cheek.
I miss you. I need to see you.
Two women chat, one holding a baby in her arms. Participants eat and mingle. Walking to Judge Keller's office, Jan holds the door open for her.
Thank you.
Later, as she leaves, Jan reaches for a hug.
You have a good day. I will. You're going to poke me with that thing.
Jan here. Removes her shoulder mic.
I mean, turn it off.
All right. Have a good day.
I do. I always hug her that way.
What a success story she is and how proud you all are of.
Nasha is somebody that we have known. She's always been one to reach out and help others. And it's just amazing to watch her grow. We were able to secure a grant to start this program for 3 years. And so we're hoping that we get to continue that. I gotta go.
Okay.
Got an overdose.
Sorry, Andrew.
She drives. It's a long haul. Cut to black. Directed by Elaine McMillian Sheldon. Produced by Elaine McMillian Sheldon and Karen Sheldon. Executive producers Jason Spingarn Koff, Zaina Lawrence, Lisa Nishimura. Executive producers Amanda Pike, Krista Scharfenberg. Director of Photography, Karen Sheldon. Edited by Kristen Neutile. Music by Daniel Hart. Copyright 2017, the Center for Investigative Reporting, Inc., all rights reserved. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture, including soundtrack, is prohibited and could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. The Center for Investigative Reporting, Inc. is the author of this motion picture for the purpose of copyright and other laws. Heroin. Glassbreaker Films. From the Center for Investigative Reporting with support from the Helen Gurley Brown Foundation. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.